Okay, we love lists. Lists are great, especially top 100 players. They're a lot more fun now in the NFL, top 100 lists, because the Texans are bound to have a few guys on these lists. The big one is the one the players vote on. That's probably the most famous one. That one's being put out in dribs and drabs right now. They're somewhere in the 70s right now, counting that one down. This one popped up yesterday, and this one makes me a little mad because the Texans made a graphic for it and posted it on all their social media, which I get because it is promoting the guys that did make this top 100 list. But when you see the graphic, you go, okay, it's PFSN's top 100, Pro Football Something Network. I opened up their page here.
All that matters is it's something you've never heard of before.
Yeah.
You know, it's a mid account, like news type account on social media.
I think it's the old Pro Football Network and they've just changed their name because it's the same graphics and some of the same, of the same vibe.
So it's got a little bit more credibility, I suppose.
It's been around a bit. Yeah. Yeah. It's not ESPN or anything like that, but here's the thing, Seth. It is a website that is touting, by using this list, they are touting their new impact score, all caps. So it's probably an acronym for something. PFSN's team of analysts, it was a team of people that did this, carefully crafted the NFL Top 100 after our analytics created a new impact score for every single player in the NFL, drawing from a wide range of data points that all contribute to an individual player's impact on their team's success. We evaluated the overall impact each player had on their respective team, factoring in the current roster construction and depth chart to establish a consistent baseline. Okay, so a lot of words there. From there, the list was carefully examined to account for any statistical outliers, players returning from injury, other variables that might affect projections, yada, yada, yada. Here's our top 100. So five Texans players made this top 100, and the Texans appropriately touted these players in a graphic on their social media. Here are the five players. Number 45 on the list was new safety CJ Gardner-Johnson. Number 42, Jalen Petrie, made the list via these impact scores. Played 12 games last year. Now, I hate this exercise because at the end it's going to make it sound like I'm downplaying guys that are already on the Texans. But when you hear the names that are on this and then fill in the blanks with who's not on it, this impact score is janky as hell. Number 39, Nico Collins. Okay, cool. I like that. That's actually higher than I would have thought Nico would have finished just based on missing a bunch of games. Number 41, sorry, is Danielle Hunter. Then number 39, Nico Collins. Derek Stingley Jr., number 10 on the list. That's pretty cool. And he had a big year last year. Who's missing, Seth, from this list right here that I just... Who's missing from the Texans?
From the list of the top 50?
Well, it's the top 100. It's yeah.
Okay, I know you were just going over guys that made the top 50.
Well,
right?
I think these guys just don't happen to make the top 50.
Well, let's see. Will Anderson.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Who else?
Danielle Hunter.
No, Danielle Hunter's on there. He's number 41.
Oh, he is. Yeah. Okay. Will Anderson was the first one that popped to my mind.
CJ Stroud doesn't pop into your mind that he would make the top 100?
I don't get upset about CJ being left off list right now.
Okay.
I don't. I just flat out don't. I can't. It is what it is. He's had 2 years of experience. I think there are very obvious reasons why he wasn't an impact player last year. Yep. But he didn't have a great season. And the degree to which it was beyond and out of his control, that's fine. I have a really hard time getting upset about lists with CJ Stroud. Right? And that's not a criticism of CJ Stroud. It's just an acknowledgement that it is what it is.
Yeah. See, now I got to go down a road that I just said I hate going down. Do you find it peculiar that Jalen Petrie is number 42 on a list?
I find it peculiar that Cam Hayward is the second best player in football according to this list. Okay,
is he really?
That's what I find peculiar.
Okay.
It's a stupid list.
Yes,
and you're falling for it. You're falling for it. That's why. You know what, Sean? It's one of the things. It's the only thing I hate about you is that you still follow that ML football account. One of the clickbaitiest accounts in all of social media, which is nothing but clickbait all over the place.
But I don't use it anymore because you got blocked by them. So I don't use it.
But I know you follow it. I've seen you.
No. I don't follow it. It shows up on my timeline. Dude, following things on Twitter is a fool's endeavor now. Like, you don't. half the stuff I get, I don't follow. You know,
it's like, yeah, whatever. Like, look, whatever metric they use to come up with this, it is what it sounds like. It's kind of mathematically based. It's not their opinion or anything. So, if anything, you've got an issue with the metric more so than anything
else. I love that you're mad at me for following something that I don't actually follow.
Who am I supposed to be angry at, Sean? The math? I'm so angry at this formula. I'm so angry at this algorithm they use to decide best 100
honestly,
players are.
Honestly, you know who I'm a little mad at? Okay, I'm glad. Yeah. I'm glad we're going down this road. I'm a little mad at the Texans for promoting this. How's
yeah,
that?
Like, why? No, 100%. Yeah. It's that's really like, okay, guys, what are you doing here?
This right.
is it's not a list that fans are going to get excited about.
Yes.
Like, why are you? It feels odd. It's the same way when they left John Metchie off the Alabama players. Remember they did that graphic with the players from Alabama, and they left off John Metchie and somebody else. Seems pretty easy.
Right.
Like, you could have just. I don't know. I feel like this is how they're testing out various interns. They're like, hey, we'll let you run the social media account.
Yeah.
And somebody found this janky list that doesn't actually feel good for Texans players. It'll drive engagement because people are going to be upset about people being left off.
No, and I understand what you're saying about me and lists.
I don't actually hate it.
But again, doing a show that's trying to capture that people, again, it's people on Twitter, so I take it, you know, it's a small sliver. But there were a lot of people angry at this list yesterday just because of the sheer lack of logic. Like, honestly, the thing is being called an impact score.
Right.
And somehow C.J. Stroud is not on the list at all. Like, Laremy Tunsil's 97 on this list. Laremy Tunsil made this list, and C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson Jr. didn't make this list. End of subject, you know?
And Cam Hayward... He's two? Defensive lineman is the second most impactful player in all of football. Yeah. It's heavily weighted toward defensive lineman. I think it seemed like, if I remember looking at it, like half of the top 10 are defensive linemen or defensive
players. You got to kind of like that then, man, as a former defensive lineman.
I like it if I'm Cam Hayward's agent. I'm going to be rolling in there to the Steelers. We're like, hey, you guys are wasting all this time with T.J. Watt's contract. Guess who's above T.J. Watt on this list? Cam freaking Hayward, you bums.
If the impact score had come along back in the early 2000s, you might be sitting on an island in the Caribbean right now instead of sitting here making V-hole jokes with me on a Thursday morning. So I'm angry at this list, as are many Texan fans. All right,
and I'm not criticizing Cam Hayward. I think Cam Hayward is he's an underrated player.
Yes.
But he's not the second most impactful player in all of football.
Impact is not underrating him one tiny bit. All right, so Seth, what was your prediction again for where Derek Stingley Jr. would wind up in a list that these lists I actually like a little more because it's human opinion of people in the sport. Yeah, this is the last day of ESPN's top 10 players by position as voted upon by 70 execs, coaches, and scouts. The cornerback position, reset for the audience what your prediction was for Stingley yesterday.
I think over the last year and a half, Derek Stingley's been the best cornerback in football. I think when you ask anonymous executives and coaches and scouts, some of whom may not have really actually seen or watched all that much in the last 18 months of Derek Stingley because they didn't play the Texans or they're in the NFC or whatever it might be. I think that's going to knock him down a little bit. And it's understandable because some of the other guys have had a longer track record. I thought that it was going to go Pat Surtain, then Derek Stingley, and then probably I think Sauce Gardner is kind of a polarizing guy. I'd say Sauce Gardner, then Trent McDuffie.
Okay.
But possibly a flip-flopping of those two.
Okay. Well, I'll start right at the top. Patrick Surtain is number one on the list. Okay. You got that right. He is number one.
I think yesterday I said that I thought Stingley would be third because of
No, you said second.
I did say second.
Second. And there's a reason why I'm resetting this and saying you said second, because number two on the list is Derek Stingley Jr.
Ah.
Yeah, he's number two. Now, here's what's interesting. The highest ranking he had was two. So nobody of these 70 people, none of them said Derek Stingley Jr. is the best cornerback in football right now, which I'm guessing means because Denzel Ward is third. The highest he got was two. McDuffie is actually fourth. The highest he got is three. Sauce Gardner is. So how about this, Seth? Sauce Gardner is fifth. The highest he got was three. His lowest ranking was at least one person didn't have in the top 10. Didn't have him in the top 10 corners. He's the highest paid corner as of 2 days ago, Sauce Gardner. So I find that interesting. So basically, all 70 of these guys said that Patrick Surtain is the best cornerback. He's unanimous the best cornerback in football, according to these people right now.
Honestly, I'm a little bit surprised that Denzel Ward was as high as he was.
Me too.
And partly just, I guess, for the same reason, though, it, you know, people ignored Derek Stingley's injuries there, so they've ignored Denzel Ward's injuries too. And Denzel Ward kind of flies under the radar because he's been in an abomination of a situation.
Yeah, yeah, with Cleveland. He had concussion issues last year too. Don't know if that. I mean, that's
I don't know how many games he ended up playing last, because you know why? I was not paying attention to the Browns.
We had no reason to. We don't have their draft picks anymore.
that's right.
There's no reason.
I forgot how closely we were watching them because of the draft picks.
The draft picks, yeah, we don't have their picks. Here's what they say about Stingley, the quotes about Stingley. Well, first, before I get to the quote, Stingley and Sauce Gardner went back-to-back early in the first round in 2022. While Gardner had the edge through the first 2 years, Stingley is winning the head-to-head battle after a banner third season. It talks about his contract, getting paid on his contract. The stats are crazy on Stingley. Stingley allowed 4.9 yards per target, the fewest among outside corners with at least 30 targets against them. He allowed 42 completions on 90 targets, and 18 of those incompletions were passes passes he knocked away. That's an astronomical number.
And a lot of the ones, too, you know, depending on how they grade it, usually just because you allow a reception doesn't mean that it was a bad play.
Right.
If it's something underneath, if it's third and long and you allow something for 7 yards or what have you, and then you factor in also the fact that Derek Stingley last year was tracking the opponent's best receiver a
Correct.
Lot of the time.
Yeah.
So it was the level of difficulty was a lot higher.
So even with all those types of completions you're talking about, he still allowed less than 50% completions last year.
Yeah.
He allowed a passer rating of 56.9 last year.
That's when I knew Daniel Jones was dumb as in the preseason. Because, I know it's the preseason. I know that you don't game plan a lot going into it. But when the Giants played the Texans, he targeted Derek Stingley like three times, didn't he?
Yeah.
On plays where there were easy options elsewhere.
Yeah.
It was either Brian Daboll just telling him like, nope, let's do it. Let's just go ahead and challenge and do it no matter what.
Yeah.
But that was also last year when he threw that ridiculous interception to Jalen Petrie out of their own end zone.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Hey, it's just preseason, but these are dumb decisions you're making.
Yeah, Daniel you're trying Jones. To practice to be good. Yeah.
I don't care who your offensive. I don't care about anything else going wrong with the Giants. Daniel Jones made some real. He was the classic example of book smart, football stupid.
Yeah.
The class. Yeah. Sometimes, man, the smarter you are in school, the worse it helps you on the football field.
Yeah.
Because there's a whole different scenario of going through a test in a controlled environment at Duke versus actually letting it yes. fly on a football field.
Yep. Here's what they're saying about Stingley. An NFC personnel evaluator said, quote, best ball skills in the league, in my opinion. Some of the interceptions and tracking the ball in the air, it's rare. That pick against Tyreek Hill. Yeah, man, that highlight. That pick against Tyreek, 99% of the DBs in the league are not making that play. That was the interception to close out the win over the Dolphins.
His ability to track the ball and all of that is really impressive. But the part that makes it extra impressive is that he has that understanding of what he can and can't get away with. Because on that second interception, you could make a case that if you didn't watch Derek Stingley a lot, you could make a case that Tyreek Hill was beating him on that play. But it really wasn't. He has such a good feel for when the ball is coming. I think he does a really good job of reading the receiver's body language
yeah.
to know where the ball's been thrown, when the ball is coming, everything else. So a lot of times where it looks like maybe a receiver's gaining a little ground on him, it's actually because he knows that it's time to look back for the ball. And as we know, we know that Tua Tagovailoa throws a very catchable football.
He does.
So
we're told.
Yeah, and he caught two of those.
You know, Stingley's thing too, his body control is amazing yeah. as well. Like that Tyreek Hill play, that was a lot of it too, was his body control.
I think I've told you this before. I know very little about surfing, right? Other than I lived on the beach for a long time. So I kind of just casually watch surfers and you get a feel for, okay, that guy knows what he's doing. That guy doesn't know what he's doing. And I remember this one time I was watching from my bed. We were like on the seventh floor, so I had a good sight. I watched this one guy who like came out and like looked at the waves. He was on the boardwalk, like looking at the waves, talking to his buddy. And by the way, he like grabbed his board and ran out to the beach.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that guy's a pro. And like, he's definitely a professional surfer. Before I ever saw him touch the water.
Yep.
And I ended up, one of my friends was actually knew a lot about surfing. And I told him about this. And he's like, oh, yeah, that was such and such. He's like, they're in town for some event.
Oh,
and yeah,
dude.
He's like one of the top 10 surfers in the world.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about Derek Singley. You don't even have to watch. You can watch right up until the quarterback throws the ball.
Yep.
And without knowing anything about football, you're like, that guy just, okay, there's something about that guy.
Yeah.
He just knows his business better than other people do.
During the play, I think even just like, I don't know, like watching Stingley just run between drills at training camp, you're like, okay, that guy, he's a corner. He just looks like he's built different. So Stingley, here's the other quote about Stingley. An NFC assistant coach said this: he's physical. He's a lot thicker than he looks. Movement skills explosive. He's always had this in his game. He just had a slow start to his career due to injury. And boy, there was a point, man, I remember it well, because it was Stingley's second year, was D'Amico's first year, and it was that Indian, and if you recall, it didn't get off to a great start, D'Amico's first year. They got out of the gate 0-2, and Stingley got hurt in that Colts game in week two. And I remember a lot of people calling for Nick Caserio's head after that. You know, Kenyon Green already had a bad rookie year, and we didn't know what CJ or Will Anderson were going to be at that point. They were only two games into their career. So the only bites at the apple in the first round that Nick Caserio had up until that point that we had any sort of body of work on was Kenyon Green being abysmal as a rookie, and Derek Stingley Jr. missing half of his rookie year and then all of a sudden being hurt for a second time in 19 games. And thank God the plane got pulled out of the nosedive with Derek Stingley Jr.
And I think that's where you look at Nico Collins and you just think, okay, man, if you can just put it together and figure out the injuries, and Nico's talked about the various ways he's changed his regimen over the last couple of years, that it's the only thing holding Nico Collins back at this point.
Mm-hmm.
That, because Nico does a lot of things, as it is with Stingley, Nico does a lot of things that's just rare. The way that he moves as a big guy, the way he's able to sit down on his breaks and all of these things, the nuances of his route running, it's just very rare to find guys that big that move the way he does. And he's just got to stay healthy.
Yep.
It's so simple, and yet so elusive,
well,
obviously.
And the part where I feel bad for Nico is that he made a conscious effort after his second year to really dial in on what the health issues were for him. Like, he changed a lot about his routine to try to address that, and yet misses three games that year, pulls a hamstring this past season, and a full Nico. I need to see a full Nico Collins season this year to see what that looks like, see what those numbers look like at the end of the year.
Just, I worry with Nico that sometimes there's just that curse of the like freakishly athletic big man that sometimes you just worry that, okay, you know, he's not freakishly athletic by, you know, conventional metrics and everything for 40 time or anything like that. But for the way he moves as a big guy, that's where he's outside. He's on the far end of the bell curve. And sometimes those guys' bodies just, it's almost like there's just too much power and mass and force in the movements that they just stay perennially injured.
Yeah. Well, and he's not a guy who's, he's not going to go early 2000s Colts receivers and slide down or run out of bounds. You know, all those things are compounded by the fact that he likes to deliver hits on people.
And I don't worry about that as much because most of his injuries have been soft tissue type stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like it's not that he's missing time with a separated shoulder or a sprained knee or anything. It's hamstrings and the like.
Yep, that's true. I was actually wrong on this cornerback list about one thing, real quick.
Oh, okay.
Christian Gonzalez, I got to Sauce fifth on the list. Sixth on the list is Christian Gonzalez, a former first-round pick for the Patriots. I think he was a rookie last year. Somebody voted for him as the best cornerback in football.
Oh, really?
Highest-ranking, Christian Gonzalez won. Lowest-ranking, unranked. A lot of these guys, boy, once you get past McDuffie at 4, and even he had a lowest ranking of 10, after that, all of these guys were either top 5 or unranked. Like, this is a position group. And the honorable and here's the second thing I wanted to hit. It's a long list of honorable mentions. It's a long list of guys who also received votes. There's 6 honorable mentions, and there's got to be at least 12 to 15 guys that also got votes. I was wrong I thought after seeing Kalen Bullock get honorable mention at safety that for sure some of these guys would have voted for Kamari Lassiter as a top 10 cornerback. Of the 70 people, zero voted for Kamari Lassiter at all as a top 10.
And with Kamari, though, too, a lot of it was that you're right. Kalen Bullock made the list and had one nice, really nice quote about him.
Yeah.
And he's caught a lot of people's eyes. I think with Lassiter, I think there are still a lot of people that understandably are kind of beholden to the 40 time and the draft status and everything else.
Yeah.
And because he got a lot better in the second half of the season, they want to see it. They want to see it over the course of a full season.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. It's a deep position too, man. I mean, the honorable mentions are Marlon Humphrey, Trayvon Diggs, Byron Murphy, A.J. Terrell, Legarius Sneed. Those are the honorable mentions. And not to mention the also receiving votes. Cooper DeJean, you know, Deron Bland, you know, Lenore from San Francisco. There's a lot of good cornerbacks right
now. The other thing about Lassiter where he's kind of in a bind in terms of perception is that, A, you have to look at him and say, wait a minute, he's playing opposite of one of the best cornerbacks in the league. That puts a lot of pressure on a guy. Teams are going to target a guy who's playing opposite of one of the best cornerbacks in the league, mm-hmm. which is that's a vote in favor of him. But then I think a lot of people also might look at it and say, well, Derek Stingley's tracking the best guy out there.
Yeah.
So we want to see Kamari Lassiter in more situations, like more high-pressure situations versus the number one guy on the other team. Et cetera.
Yeah, that's I could see that. I'm just shocked he didn't get one vote.
I feel bad that I said that I hated that about you, Sean. Hate is a strong word to use. I said that it's the only thing I hate about you that you still follow some of the clickbait accounts. Yeah, okay. I don't actually hate.
You've been carrying that around with you for the last 10 minutes.
I mean, I don't have like a website up about it or anything.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's okay, Seth. I knew what you meant.
Even though I'm saying it jokingly, like hate's a strong word.
It is a strong word, but trust me, there's plenty that I hate about myself from time to time. So no offensive lineman got votes in this exercise. The exercise is over now. The book is closed. We'll go back through the tabulations at some point later in the show. Zero
post-workout drink.
Zero offensive lineman got a vote. If we're going to base votes on tough talk, though, here was Jake Andrews. Texans, as of right now, their starting center, right? He was with the ones throughout OTAs and minicamp. He was here was Jake Andrews on with Mark Vandermeer and John Harris on Texans All Access talking about the vibe on this offensive line.
The ball is going to be run. I tell you that much. We're going to run the football. Taylor's doing a good job with putting all that stuff together. We're going to protect CJ or whoever's back there. Mm-hmm. Try to make it us five up front. We're going to try to make it our life's work to not have anybody in his lap mm-hmm. or touching him at all. We're going to pound the rock and we're going to air it out. We're going to keep people on their toes and we're going to play tough physical football. And people are going to know when they wake up on Monday morning that they just got done playing the Houston Texans.
Hey, that's tough talk right there, man.
It's tough talk out of a guy that's played really just 1.5 games of NFL football. I enjoyed this interview. I forgot to send the audio, Sean. There's the one thing I'll send it. We can play it later.
Yeah, we play it later. Yeah.
Is Jake Andrews, if you listened to it and you didn't watch the interview, you'd think he was like a crusty old 37-year-old dude. He's got, in a good way. At one point he says, ever since I was knee-high to a grasshopper, I've wanted to play center.
When was the last time you heard that?
Are you my grandpa?
I know.
Yeah. So, all right. Like when D'Amico said it at the press conference or at the pep rally a couple years ago, he said, "Hey, when the other team wakes up, we want them to know that they played the Houston Texans." You're like, "All right, this is D'Amico Ryans, and you know we've already seen his defenses. We watched him as a player, And then the defense ends up following suit.
Sure.
So I think that's probably a phrase that D'Amico has used a few times in team meetings. And I think when it comes to the Texans' defense, certainly other teams know that their quarterback almost got decapitated when they played the Texans
for
the day
before.
Yeah, like they know that they woke up Trevor Lawrence woke up maybe the next morning. We don't know if he woke up the next day or not.
Yeah.
And he knew he had played the Houston Texans defense. When I hear the offense say it, I get excited.
Yeah.
But it's also a guy that's got – he's hardly played in the NFL at all.
You know
other
what,
than on other than on a field goal and PAT.
You know what, though? He's a new guy. You know, if it were Titus saying it, I would be like, okay, bro. We see how agitated you get when people denigrate the offensive line on social media and whatnot. You settle down till I see people waking up on Monday saying, boy, we just played the Texans. You can't say Jake Andrews is new. He's new to the building. I'm here for the new, you know?
I think as far as him, at least in the public OTA or the OTAs where the media was allowed to be there, Jake Andrews was getting most of the reps with the ones at center. He talked about this in this interview with Mark and John. You know, part of it, I think, as we thought at the time, was just simple familiarity. The Bill O'Brien offense he was playing for Bill O'Brien in New England for 1 year, and he has a lot of familiarity with it. And Nick Caley's going to do a lot of the stuff that Bill O'Brien did. So he said that the terminology is different, but a lot of the concepts and everything are the same. So I think him having familiarity with it probably gives him a leg up over the other young guys.
But yeah.
I'm trying not to read too much into the OTA snap counts as far as who's the favorite to be the center.
Yeah, this thing could go a billion different directions once training camp starts. No question about that.
I do like, you know what, though? I'm not trying to throw shade or anything. I'm happy that these are the things they're talking about.
Yes.
That the focus on physicality and all of that. You got to go out and do it on the field, obviously. But if the offense can be, if they can get to 60% of the swarm quotient that the defense is, that's going to be a huge step forward. And this is the problem, Sean. And this is what people outside of Houston wouldn't understand. Okay, Laremy Tunsil, best offensive lineman on the team, obviously. Texans trade him away. Why? Well, they're talking about, it sounds like the propaganda that they're feeding the players is, we want the other side of the ball to know, man, wow, I played the Houston Texans yesterday. As great as Laremy Tunsil is as a pass protector, did anybody wake up? They might wake up upset that they didn't get any pressures or sacks, but I don't think there's a single defensive lineman in the history of playing against Laremy Tunsil that woke up the next day and thought, oh, man, oh, boy, he beat the crap out of me.
Not a mauler.
Oh, I'm miserable. That's not his game.
Yep.
So they just want to reinvent the mold of how that offensive line operates, and I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess the question
is, he's a finesse player.
Yeah, at least for purposes of this year, is Cam Robinson that guy? Is Blake Fisher that guy? You know, is Arianti Ursary, once he signs, is he going to be that kind of guy?
I'll tell you from experience, just there are times that you go against some solid offensive lines that might not be great offensive lines, but when they're constructed a certain way and when they operate, the Ravens back when, obviously they had Jonathan Ogden, who was a monster of a man, but he wasn't their most physical lineman. So when the Ravens really started getting good, they had some really good and solid interior offensive linemen, but they were full-grown men.
Yeah.
And it was you woke up the next day and you're like, man, I don't know, that was a battle. Mm-hmm. That was a battle. Mm-hmm. And it didn't have anything to do with the necessarily one individual. It was just the five guys and the way that they operated. It was a really physical battle. So even if they don't end up being a really a top 10 offensive line or something like that, you can still have an element of physicality and intimidation to you.
Yep. Payne and Pendergast with you. Text message. Stingley is like a cat in the air. Elite body control.
Yeah.
Cats do have good body control when they're in the air like that. He is. He's like a cat. Good job.
They always land on their feet unless you have we had some breed of a cat. Shady. She was so dumb. Some kind of long hair that they don't have the twisting instinct to where they can always land on their feet. And so if you drop it, you know, you drop a cat from 3 feet and it's usually no big deal.
Right.
Shady would land with a thud.
Oh,
and you'd feel
wow.
like the worst pet owner in the history of the world.
Shady
like,
took bumps.
I just dropped that cat on its back. I didn't do it intentionally.
Oh my God.
But it was cats usually, it's anything 3 feet and below.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's no big deal to them.
Right,
yeah.
right.
Not Shady.
I got mad yesterday, Seth, flipping around the channels. You and I talked about the Superman movie yesterday, which, by the way, Amy and I are going to see tomorrow afternoon. So we're going to go see this very polarizing Superman movie. I'll come back Monday with a review of it. But if you recall, we played this from Mike Francesa yesterday, longtime radio host up in New York. He's got his own streaming show now. He's like 70 plus years old, and he hated the Superman movie.
What I'm getting into is this stunk as for someone who's a old-time TV show Superman guy trying to get entertained for a couple hours and wants to see Superman, this movie was pure torture to sit through. Torture. I mean, I'll tell you this. If my name was on the credits, I'd hide it. That's how bad it was. This was 2 hours of this new Superman. It was a decent, he wasn't Christopher Reeve, but he was okay Superman. 2 hours of him getting the crap beat out of him. Who wants to see Superman get beat up for 2 hours? He's getting beat up by everybody. Plus, you have other superheroes in the movie. I didn't go there to see some guy named Mr. Terrific. I didn't go there to see the Green Lantern or some lady named Hawk something or other. I don't even know who she was. Okay, these other superheroes who he calls on. Who needs other superheroes? This is a Superman movie. You want to see Superman flirt with Lois Lane, keep his disguise, and battle crime. That's what you want to see.
Okay, that's what you want to see, Mike Francesa. Yeah. That's what you want to see.
My favorite, though, is he's presenting himself as a guy who he knows. He's a Superman connoisseur.
Oh, yeah.
But when he's irate that there's a super dog. Ben, I'm so impressed with you. Ben immediately... pointed out that 1955 was the first time there was a super dog in any of the Superman vehicles. Yes,
Ben,
in the comic book. Yeah.
Ben, I hate to put this on you. Do you have Francesa 2 readily available? We can just play like the first 10 seconds of it to hear him just aghast at there being not just dog Seth, but robots. It's 2025. Like, robots are a fairly normal thing in these movies, I would think.
I'll tell you, the one thing I can identify with Francesa with is in superhero movies and really everywhere else in any kind of movie anymore, or comic book type things. Like, to be honest, the writing has gotten a lot better. Yeah. And what they do now is they present the complexity of characters and they show their flaws as much. Where back in the day, it was very simple. Like, this guy's evil.
Yeah.
You don't even know why he's evil. He's just evil.
He's just evil.
This guy is good and pure, and he's you can't beat him. And as a kid, you love that. There's a part of me that yearns for, like, I don't want to know the villain's backstory.
Yeah.
Can I, like, I don't want to hear his sob story about why he was, what his childhood was
daddy
like.
Daddy issues.
Like,
yeah.
Can I just be simple and like, yeah, the good guy is the good guy, the bad guy is the bad guy.
Seth, not an origin story fan. Didn't see Joker. I'm guessing.
No, I get it. This is just times, you know, where you want the simplicity of it.
For sure. For sure. Well, real quick, here's Francesa on robots and dogs in the movie.
Early on, there's robots. I don't want robots. Okay. I don't want robots taking care of Superman. I don't. Then there's a super dog. Who came up with a super dog? I mean, we all like dogs. Okay. And I didn't like the dog getting beat on in the movie. It bothered me. But hey, who came up with a dog with a cape?
The Superman people. 70 years ago, they came up with it or whatever it is, right?
I don't think he. I bet comic book aficionados were pretty disgusted with Francesa because he's presenting himself like he's some kind of, like, he
expert.
Knows Superman because he's old.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, everything that he mentioned, if the people actually read the comic book, I think Francesa has seen the movies, but he's not a comic book guy.
Here's what made me mad. Yesterday, I'm flipping around the channels yesterday afternoon and, you know, middle of the day, I'm just flipping around to see what's on. And Superman 2 is on True TV. So I stop on Superman 2. I like Superman 2 better than Superman 1 because of General Zod. The Zod and his two cohorts, the hot-looking chick and then the big dude that doesn't talk. I like that trio of villains. So I stop on that, and I stop on the part where Superman is flying up to the Fortress of Solitude holding Lois Lane with him up there.
Yeah.
Because he's now fallen in love with Lois Lane, but in order to be able to marry her and procreate with her, he has to go up to the Fortress of Solitude to talk to his parents' force ghosts or whatever they are and forfeit all of his superhero powers. They warned him. His mom warned him. She said, you're going to be a normal man now. You're going to bleed like a normal man. You're going to feel pain like a normal man. And he said, that's fine, Mom. I love her.
Yeah.
You gave up. I haven't seen Superman 2025 yet. I don't know. Francesa hates the guy. Whatever. Some people like it. Some people hate it.
I don't want robots.
There is zero chance. There is zero chance that 2025 Superman did anything as dumb in this movie that I'm about to see tomorrow as the Christopher Reeve version did when he forfeited all of his powers so he could bang Margot Kidder.
wasn't Superman 2 the one where he flew opposite of the rotation?
That was one.
To turn back time.
That was one.
Oh, that was kind of dumb.
Yeah, it was dumb. Yeah, it was dumb.
You know, I have a hard time suspending. I can suspend disbelief when it comes to comic book movies and everything, but like, I don't think this works, man. I don't think that's a step too far.
You're so right about the just like how elementary and rudimentary they just draw the lines. Like, these guys talking in deep voices with black outfits on are the bad guys. You know,
I think Margot Kidder. I don't know. Was she was 80s hot though, but was she?
She was okay. Some of my shade I throw at him valuing Margot Kidder to that. Margot Kidder played Lois Lane in the movie Kids. She went off the deep end. Like, Margot Kidder did not age well.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, she had some kind of issues and everything. Right.
Yeah. And still, even if she were hot, even if she were Phoebe Cates, who turned 62 yesterday, by the way, changed many a young man's life in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Even if it were Phoebe Cates in the 80s, I don't give up superhero powers for that. No chance. Bullets bouncing off of you, the ability to just throw people around.
The General Zod.
Yeah.
I wanted to fact check myself looking at the picture of him. I think General Zod, honestly, he had the creepiest beard ever.
Yeah,
and I think, honestly, that might have been the point where beards started to fall out of fashion.
Yeah.
I can remember, because, you know, in the 70s, it was, late 60s, Zod. 70s, all kinds of dudes had beards. I remember watching that when I was 5 or 6 years old in 1980 and thinking, like, that is a creepy mustache. I don't even know what creepy is yet.
Yeah.
I'll tell you some stories about not my ignorant. Anyway, that's creepy.
Yes.
That's a creepy beard.
That's an interesting
And I think after
beard.
That point, a lot of people were like, I don't know, man. I don't want to look like General Zod. I want to be clean shaven.
I like that.
And that's why beard stopped being a thing for
General
like
Zod.
Two full decades, really, until facial hair came
That's
back.
Right, right. Couldn't take over the earth, but stopped the advent of the beard in the 80s. General Zod. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. There is an NFL player that is still dug in contractually, and I'm surprised how many people think that this player can actually go back and play college football. Florio has found his new cause. We will have that coming up next. All right, good to be with you on a Thursday. The ESPYs were last night, top of the hour. I pulled some of the jokes from Shane Gillis's monologue.
Good.
Did you get a chance to see it, Seth, or will this be the first run at it for you?
This will be the first run because I didn't. You sent the audio and everything, but I'm like, oh, okay, these are jokes. I want to hear them fresh.
Yeah.
I want to. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. I'll let you be joyless, and I get to actually enjoy the segment.
It's actually, well, Amy and I, we were out to eat last night, and it bled into going past 7. I'm like, make sure you record the ESPYs. I want to see the monologue. I'll just say this. He made it as uncomfortable at times as you predicted it might be.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah. So I just pulled the ones.
Were the jokes directed at people in the audience?
Yeah, some of them.
Yeah.
Some of them.
Did the people in the audience, was there anybody that was really uncomfortable with it?
Sometimes. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, good. Yeah.
I'll go back and watch it this afternoon.
Yeah, watch the whole thing. I pulled the ones that were getting the most buzz on social media because that's the easiest place to go get the audio. So we'll do that at the top of the hour. This Shamar Stewart story is really interesting. And the local aspect to this, Shamar Stewart, first round pick out of Texas A&M. He's a defensive lineman, and he is the one first round pick who has yet to sign his contract. You know, training camp begins for a lot of these teams in the next couple of days. Rookies are reporting to some teams already as we speak, and Shamar Stewart has not signed yet with Cincinnati and has been very vocal about why. He's not been silent about this. Cincinnati is trying to do something that they've never done with any of their previous first-round picks, and that is add language in where they can draw back some of the guaranteed money in this deal if things don't work out between Shamar Stewart and the Bengals for whatever reason. And I don't think this is things that other teams are doing. It's just the Bengals. And we've seen this for decades with the Bengals is they try to cut corners and reduce risk and reduce cost and exposure and things like that. They're the closest thing in the NFL, Seth, to a mom and pop shop. You know, they're a family-owned team with no other business other than football, and they act like it sometimes. Shamar Stewart is not signed yet. He's been very vocal about thinking that he's right in this, and he is currently working out in College Station. When that was reported earlier this week, it was actually reported and construed by some people, actually smart people, that he's working out in College Station, like practicing with the team, and that he might play for the Aggies this coming season and then put himself back in the draft next year.
Yeah, that's a big leap for a lot of reasons. For one, it's just it's very common for guys to go back and work out with their college team, especially in the first couple of years after you're done.
Yeah.
It's nice. You're comfortable with it. You got coaches that know you and all of that.
For sure. Well, and to be clear, and on the heels of that report where everybody's construing it as he's out there doing stuff with the team,
yeah.
The team's not even there right now. He's just using
you're not
the
allowed
facilities.
To do anything. There's guys working out, but yeah. You're not allowed to do football activities or anything.
Right.
It's not like he's learning the new defense or what have you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's dumb. That's dumb. The second part of it that's dumb is that as of now, you're not allowed to go back to college football. But there is – and a credit slash blame Florio for introducing this during the Shedeur Sanders conversation. Florio thinks that it's – there's a – that legally, if challenged, that might not stand up. That the NCAA should – allow players to come back even if they've entered the draft. So that's, but it's certainly not a slam dunk. Oh yeah, he can just choose and go back to college. There would be a court case and every other thing else involved.
Yeah, there would. Now, if he just plays it out and just sits out the year, then he will go back in the draft next year. And the Bengals are not allowed to draft him if he goes back in the draft next year. So he will go to another team. It's an interesting story because I wonder how does the NFL look at a guy like that who sat out, you know, who will have had to sit out football for a year. You know, that he's probably already got some money in the bank through NIL, so he's not desperate, I would imagine, to have to go play to keep the lights on in his apartment or anything like that. You know, he would be delaying getting a second contract by a year.
You know what's interesting is now because of NIL. Let's say he decides to test it, that he's, okay, I'm going to try to do this. I'm going to sue to try to go back to college football. He would get some of his assistance from his school, I'm sure, in that endeavor. They'd love to have him back. Or maybe not. Well, I don't know what his school would do because it's the NCAA itself that's saying that, yeah. So however it ends up working out, because guys have made substantial money in NIL, there are probably more guys who, have, as long as they've been careful with their money and put some of it away for a rainy day at least, that would feel comfortable saying, all right, look, I know I'm gonna take a hit this year, but I'm gonna challenge it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna see what happens. And if it works out, then I also get the NIL money this year. But if it doesn't work out, then I've still, you know, I'm not gonna starve in this year while I'm waiting to go re-enter the draft.
If you were a personnel guy, if you were Nick Caserio, you're GM of an NFL team, and you've got a pick, and Shamar Stewart is back in the draft next year. He's back in the pool of players. So however you graded him coming into 2025, you probably have a similar grade on his body of work and same grade on his body of work. That is what it is. Would you view the year off as a positive, a negative, or a non-factor?
Okay, so there's two things. One is the actual year off and whether it's good or bad. You know, he wouldn't have improved at football necessarily, but he'd be fresh physically, all that.
Yep.
He'd be 1 year older. I wouldn't think too much about it one way or the other there. It's kind of like when Nico Collins, and we saw this with a lot of the guys in the COVID year. Nico Collins took the COVID year off, and a lot of other guys did too. And, you know, maybe Nico Collins would have been a first rounder if he'd actually played, but he would have also gotten better. So if you had Shamar Stewart graded however you had him graded at the time, I don't think that necessarily changes. You're going to go off his last year. The other side of it is, okay, is this guy a pain in the butt, or do I disagree with the way he handled it? And that's going to come down to the individual GM.
Yeah.
I think for sure anybody that drafts him is probably going to want to have a really good conversation with his agent beforehand.
Sure.
They want to be sure that there's not – that they almost have – you know, a deal in principle agreed to before the fact.
Definitely.
But the Bengals are a team that's known for making things more difficult than they need to be.
When Florio wrote an article about this yesterday and lays out the path that Shamar Stewart could take to potentially sue and go back to college for a year if he wanted to play. And it could be at A&M or anywhere because of the transfer portal. He could go play at any number of schools and get paid via NIL and make some money. Maybe, who knows, maybe make almost as much as he would have been making on his rookie deal, depending on how badly a team or a school wants him to play. I would guess that there are probably some NFL owners and some people in the NFL that really want to encourage the Bengals to just squash whatever this silly, petty thing they want is in the contract. Because I think the last thing the NFL wants is for the door to be open for especially the bad teams, for the door to be open for guys to say, oh, okay, I got drafted by I got drafted by the Bears, you know, whatever team, to think of any bad team over the last couple of years. To have the avenue available to go back to college and get paid to go back to college, the NFL does not want that. You know, the draft is a huge, huge marketing thing for them. It's a big money generator for them. The last thing they want is for that night of the first round of the draft to have this cloud hanging over it where these guys are getting picked by teams and they might not want to go to that team. You know, I'm not saying that players shouldn't have that right. The way you go about gaining employment in the NFL is 180 degrees different than the way you go about getting employment in the real world. You know, getting drafted to a city you may not want to go to, and you have to go there or sit out a year. I don't think the NFL wants that door open at all for players to be allowed to go back to school.
It does kind of, there's almost, you could, there are some, there's things about the draft that just feel very un-American in a lot of ways that you just, you don't have, you're one of the best students, you're brilliant in medical school. You graduate number one from Harvard Medical School, but you're not allowed to choose where you go to work afterwards. It doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense that you don't have that freedom to do so. So, yeah, they just don't want to open that door to challenging all of that. I guess, you know, to answer your original question, how do teams treat it? I don't think it's anything like a Curt Flood type situation where Curt Flood basically got blackballed from baseball for challenging free agency and all that, or the lack of free agency.
Yeah.
So that part of it, I don't think is a concern. Yeah, I think that there might be some discussions with the Browns up in Cincinnati, Mike Brown, about just hey, listen, man, you're just we don't want to open this Pandora's
text
box.
Something like, hey, Brownie, come on, man, let's squash this thing. We don't need to open the door. Texter's asking a question that I have about this whole thing, but we're up against it. I'll bring that up when we come out of the next segment. Also, I've got a handful of the Shane Gillis jokes from the ESPYs last night from the monologue. I like the monologue. Some of the people in the audience didn't seem too pro about the monologue. I think the way Gillis handles some of this stuff, though, is genius. We'll have that coming up in the next segment as well. Stay there.